chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Mark Miller on the show today. Mark is the Vice President of High Performance Leadership at Chick-fil-A Corporate. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Mark, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. All I can say is, wow. I cannot tell you how excited I am to have you on the show today. I am a huge fan of yours. I've been a raving fan of yours for a very long time. I've read a lot of your books and on leadership, and I've just admired from afar how you have trained up and the leaders within Chick-fil-A. I'm a big Chick-fil-A fan. I told you on a sidebar, I said every day I could vacillate between Chick-fil-A and Panera for lunch. So I love both of those brands, but you know, I want to also just give a huge shout out to our mutual friend, Zach Clark, for connecting us. And I know you've known Zach for a very long time, and he's a big fan of yours as well.
Well, thank you. Great to be with you.
So, Mark, I know obviously Chick-fil-A, people know that Chick-fil-A is headquartered in Atlanta. I don't know if you're from Atlanta originally, but take me back to your childhood. Tell me a little bit about growing up for you. Did you grow up there? You know, what were you like as a young boy? Tell me a little bit, what were your interests as a young boy?
Well, I grew up in Atlanta. So I've been here my entire life thus far and came from a great home, mom and dad and a younger brother and younger sister. And we were involved in the church. I tell folks I started going to church 9 months before I was born. And so we spent a lot of time at the church and in various activities. And I also played a lot of sports. And I remember even being on multiple teams during the same season and rolling around in the back of the station wagon changing uniforms, because that was in the days before seatbelts, because I had to go from one game to another. So I grew up playing sports and just had a great childhood experience.
Yeah, so you did have siblings?
Yes, a younger brother and a younger sister.
Okay, so you were the oldest. Wow. That's, yeah. And so have you seen that sports, that love of sports, kind of play into your business life? Because we see a lot of enterprise. Enterprise is a rent-a-car, is a really great esteemed client of ours. And that is one of the things that they look for, Mark, when they're hiring people, is people that played sports, people that were Eagle Scouts. There's a certain DNA, I guess, if you will, in those type of people, and they make great hires.
Well, there are probably a couple of factors. One is I learned early on that I loved being on teams. And so about 25 years ago, when we decided as an organization to really try and figure out what made some teams flourish while others floundered, I was excited when they gave me that project. I couldn't draw a lot from my own personal background because it seemed like I was on a lot of awful teams for years. In fact, I wondered if I was the problem because all the teams I was on were awful. But it really affirmed in me that there's something powerful about teams. And so I think that's one way that childhood influenced my career. I think the other way is that as a young person, I was never the star athlete, but I decided early on that I could work hard and that I could play hard and I could hustle and I could do the extra drills and do a little something extra. And so I have tried to bring that into my career and think I could probably point to a few examples of that over the last 40 years.
Well, I want to talk about that. So I think you have a BA in communications from Georgia State. That does not surprise me, really, and especially in what you've done. And you even founded the communications department within Chick-fil-A. But let's talk a little bit about your 40-plus year journey at Chick-fil-A. I think you started as an hourly worker, right, in one of the restaurants?
Yes, I worked in one of the restaurants, and that was in 1970-something. And I was an awful team member. And I remember thinking that I was going to be fired. And so I made an early career decision that I'm quick to point out is not career advice, but I decided to leave because I didn't want to have to explain on my resume that I had been fired. So I left, I went and got another job. And then 6 months later, I got laid off. And I thought, goodness gracious, I need a job. I can't do what they do in the restaurant, but those seem like nice people at Chick-fil-A. So I think I'll go and get a job at the corporate headquarters, which of course makes no sense at any level, but this was the mind of a kid. And so I walked in and I told the receptionist I wanted a job working in the warehouse because I knew they had a warehouse. And so she had me take a seat in their lobby. And just a few minutes later, Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, came out to interview me. Which again makes no sense at many levels until you put that in context. I learned that I was interviewing to be the 16th corporate employee. So if you've only got 15 employees, the head man or the head woman is probably the one doing those interviews. And so I tell people it was a combination of God's grace and lack of discernment on Truett's part that he gave me that job in the warehouse. And that was 44 years ago, somewhere in that vicinity.
My goodness. Well, no, I think he was very smart, Mark, because you've been there and you've done a lot of things. And I want to talk about that. But one of the things I was going to ask you, because I knew that you were an early on corporate employee, and Truett was such a beloved leader, I know. And I was going to ask you, tell me one story that you can remember about Truett. I had no idea that he was the one that actually interviewed you.
He did. He did indeed. Yeah, there's so many Truett stories. I would say as I think back on my interactions with him over really four decades, I was always amazed and inspired by his generosity. And the world will only know a fraction of it. And I'm assuming I only knew a fraction of it because he wasn't generous for others to know about it. He was generous because he had a generous heart. And it was not just his finances. He was very generous with his time, with his encouragement. Just, again, probably the most generous person that I've ever had the privilege to spend time with.
I'll never forget, Mark. It just reminds me, Jeff Henderson. You probably remember Jeff, and he wrote the book Four. And I will never forget him telling me that early on, one of his jobs was to drive Truett around. And he said he was so nervous about this. And he was thinking of all of these things that Truett may ask him, you know, about business or his aspirations or whatever. He said the whole time, all Truett wanted to know was about his family. Tell me about your family. Tell me about your dreams. Tell me. He wanted to know all about him. And I've never forgotten that. I mean, what an incredible person.
Yeah, he was always others-centered. And I think that's why just about everybody that ever met him loved him.
Yeah. For sure. Well, let's talk a little bit because you started in the warehouse, but then, like I said before, you started the corporate communications department. They didn't have a corporate communication, so you started that. I think you moved over to quality and customer satisfaction.
Yeah. And see, let me say this before you go any further. I don't think this had much of anything to do with my talent or skills. I think it was a little bit of let the kid do it, let the kid do it, and I would do anything. And so as we were growing as an organization, we saw some of these needs, and I ended up stepping into several of those roles over the last 4 decades of actually starting new functions, new departments, so that we could build the solid infrastructure for where we are today.
Yeah, and there are so many lessons there, Mark. You know, for young people, it's like, don't always wait. You know, obviously you've got to get the blessing to go forward, but look in with your own eyes, you can see what the gaps are. And you had never started a corporate communications department before, had you?
No, actually, I was still working in the warehouse and I was going to school at night down at Georgia State. I actually changed my major to communications after I moved into that role.
Mark, there's just so much wisdom there because you didn't have the experience, but you had the agility to learn and the acumen to learn. And I think that that is so important. But today, you're the VP of High Performance Leadership. And I love that. What would you say about that? I mean, and you guys are known for developing amazing leaders. But what would you say about that role and what has been really gratifying to you? I think I know what you're going to say, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, let me give you just a quick word of backstory on how we got there. About 25 years ago, we began to see cracks in our system. And I'll use that term loosely because we really didn't have a system. The way we had developed leaders prior to that time was something I see in a lot of organizations, and it's a process of immersion and osmosis. And we didn't have enough leaders. You know, I don't know what your listeners do, but what I've encountered throughout my career is that when you have a problem to solve or an opportunity to seize, a natural reaction is to put a leader on it. Now, she or he may not single-handedly resolve it, but they'll assess it, they'll put a team around it, they'll put resources on it, they'll prioritize it, and that problem or that opportunity would be taken care of. So about 25 years ago, we had problems to solve and opportunities to seize. We looked over our shoulder at our leadership bench, and we were not pleased with what we had. We were talking about, I think this person can lead in a few years, and maybe they'll be ready someday. Well, what do you do in those situations? You give those problems and opportunities to existing leaders, which is a short-term solution, but that's not a long-term play. And so I was asked by our executive committee to figure out this issue of how do you accelerate leadership development? And so I put together a team of really smart people and we went to work on it. And what I didn't know at the time is that was the first of a dozen projects like that that I have been part of in an effort to grow our organizational leadership capacity. Now, it was not my full-time job for many, many years. It was somewhat of a hobby. It was something I worked on. And more over the last decade, I've been shifting more and more of my attention to that pursuit. And that's where the organization came up with the title, the Vice President of High Performance Leadership. But that's kind of the journey we've been on, is continuing to try and figure out how to help our leaders grow their leadership capacity.
Yeah. And I don't think that there's going to be a listener out there, Mark, that's leading an organization that wouldn't say that they want a high performance culture. And we're going to talk more about that. Mark, you have written you've written 10 books. You've got over a million in print, 25 languages, and a book that we're going to talk about later that I'm so excited about that's coming out in April. And I got this culture rules. I got a little preview of this and I'm so excited about this book, but I'm going to read, not to embarrass you, but I just want our listeners to know some of these books that you've written. The Talent Magnet, How to Attract and Keep the Best People. Boy, that's important today. Win Every Day, Proving Practices for Extraordinary Results. Leaders Made Here, Building a Leadership Culture. Chess, Not Checkers, Elevate Your Leadership Game, Win the Heart, How to Create a Culture of Full Engagement, and many, many more. But I told you I had picked up your book, Smart Leadership. And I am not saying this to tickle your ears, Mark. I read a lot of books. I'm a voracious reader. And I'm telling you, this might be one of the best leadership books I read this year. It's so good. I'm going to read just a couple of, I'm a big review junkie. You know, like if we're going on a trip, I'm reading every TripAdvisor review, but I'm just going to read just a couple here. This is John Gordon. He's written several books. I remember reading The Energy Bus. Smart leadership is packed with wisdom and practicality, seasoned with real-world experience. Leaders who want to be more effective, add more value, scale their impact now have the guide that they have been searching for. Read this book. Make these simple, smart choices and take your leadership to the next level. You've got one here from Marshall Goldsmith, which I know our leaders are going to recognize. And then Zach Clark, who is our mutual friend, here's what he says. Books by Mark Miller are valuable for anyone with an honest desire to grow as a leader. But I feel that this book is the book I've been waiting for 20 years for him to write. As you turn the pages, you'll discover a carefully curated collection of Mark's profound insights and practical teaching. It is all woven together with his straightforward wisdom, pieced together from decades of personal growth. I know Mark has more to teach us than one book could contain, but this comes mighty close to having him as your personal mentor. So I'm not the only one that feels this about this book. I just absolutely love it. One of the things that you talk about in the book, Mark, is I love how you start the book. Would you tell our listeners, it's the Indiana Jones story. And choices. Can you tell them that story if they don't remember it?
Sure. So I'll give you just a word of context. I mentioned that we've done a dozen of these projects over the years. We're always trying to figure out what are the emerging needs that we can address proactively, hopefully. Sometimes we're even trying to look over the horizon and say, how can we serve our leaders and leaders around the world? And several years back, pre-pandemic, we began to see a lot of leaders struggling. Men and women that you would assume know how to lead, and they might even have a track record of success as a leader, but they're struggling. And so my team went to work trying to figure out what is going on here. And we broadly labeled this a question of effectiveness, leadership effectiveness. And we went to work again. I won't get into all those details, but where we landed brings us to the story you just referenced. For those that remember the Indiana Jones movie, when they were on the last crusade, they were looking for the Holy Grail, the mythical cup of Christ. And as legend has it, anyone who would drink from it would never die. And so Indiana's looking for the cup. This is building toward the climactic scene. He goes into a cave where he finds scores of beautiful cups and a knight who's been there guarding the cups for 700 years, which gives a little bit of credence to this idea of you'll never die, but that's not really the point of the story. And so he's standing there looking, knowing that he has to figure out which cup is the cup. Well, at that point, the bad guy shows up who's also looking for the cup. And under much duress, Indiana has to give this guy the opportunity. So he goes and he chooses this cup that is totally bedazzled. It looks like it's solid gold with all these jewels on it. And he grabs it, takes a drink, and he has what I would call a mortal meltdown. Just right there in front of you, he's done. And the knight says he chose poorly. Well, Indiana, it's now his turn. He goes and is drawn to a simple hand-hewn wooden cup. And I think there's a secondary message here that sometimes we get so distracted by those things that are glittery, gold, and the bedazzled. But he looked at that wooden cup and he said, that is the cup of a carpenter. And the knight says, you have chosen wisely. And so what our team was able to discern after a lot of hard work is that the key to our influence, our impact, and our effectiveness is our choices. And smart leadership is about four smart choices that you and I can make to improve our impact in the world.
Yes, I love that story. What a powerful punch. It is our choices that will inform our impact. So the question is, how do we make the smart choices? And I know we're going to get into that a little bit.
Well, so there are four choices, and I'll hit these real quickly. And then if you want to talk more about them, we can. The first smart choice is to confront reality. You need to lead from a position of truth. If you're not grounded in the truth, you can never lead from a position of strength. You have to choose to confront reality. And we all know leaders, ourselves, I would say included, who from time to time are unwilling or unable to confront reality. That's the first choice. The second choice is that you have to choose to grow capacity. And you say, I've had leaders say, well, whoa, wait a minute. If I had capacity, I wouldn't have all the issues I've got. Well, there are a lot of choices that you and I make that directly impact our capacity. And so that's the second choice. The third choice is to fuel curiosity. And when we talk about curiosity, I'll have to put it in this context. I've been asked in one form or another for years, is there a leadership fountain of youth? And I used to say, I hope so, because I want to add value to my last breath. Well, now I would say there is a leadership fountain of youth, and it's curiosity. You mentioned earlier in our conversation, my early career. I think it was a defining moment for me when it was explained to me very, very early on, within my first 6 months in the organization, that your capacity to learn determines your capacity to lead. Lifelong learning is the only ticket to lifelong influence. And so that's the third choice. And the fourth choice is the choice to create change. And we debated that as a team. We said, do we have to include that? And we said, well, yes, we probably do, because there are leaders who might make those first three choices and they have very little impact in the world, because progress is always preceded by change. And leaders have to be willing to create change. So those are the four choices that we think will help leaders raise their level of effectiveness.
Yeah, so good. Well, and I think last week or the week before, Mark, I was interviewed for an article and they said, what is your greatest leadership challenge? What's the greatest leadership challenge? And I said, for me, it's the art of discernment. It's really distinguishing the best from the good. I've got a really dear friend, Rich McClure, who used to be the CEO for Unigroup. And he says, I want to give my best yes. And I always remember that we want to give our best yes. And so the choices that we make really are so important. And it's discernment. It comes down to discernment. We have got so much more to talk about, Mark. I want to talk about Drucker. I want to talk about cultural rules. I want to talk about all kinds of things. But we do need to take a quick break. And we'll be right back with Mark Miller on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Mark Miller. So, Mark, I want to just talk to you about a few little things, and then I want to dig a little bit more into smart leadership, and then we're going to talk about culture rules. But, you know, we've already talked about Zach a little bit. And Zach and I, you know, he really considers you one of his greatest mentors, Mark. And he absolutely has so much respect for you and said you've so positively influenced him. And he gave me... I've got another friend that says everybody has isms. So here's a few Mark Miller isms for you from Zach. He said, everyone agrees that hiring is the most important activity we can be involved in. But at Chick-fil-A, we simply act like it is the most important thing. So I know that's really, you guys have a very strict and methodical hiring process when at Chick-fil-A, when you're hiring people.
We do. I use the term strict. I would just say rigorous and very thorough. It actually goes back to something Peter Drucker said when asked, what's the most important decision that a leader makes? And Drucker says, who does what? And we actually believe him. We think it's the most important decision a leader makes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know you're a huge Drucker fan. You are. And if our listeners have not read this, it's The Effective Executive, right? I think is one of your favorite books of Drucker's. So I would say get that book if our listeners have not read that. Another one, and I love this. I chuckled when I read this. You get no credit for doing the wrong things well.
Yeah, my team has probably heard me say that 10,000 times over the years, because we are so fortunate and blessed. We have selected some amazing people. They're going to do good work. The trick is, what are we going to work on? And so yeah. I spend a lot of my time and have for decades not trying to get people to do better work, but to try and be sure that we're all working on the right things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so important. Such great wisdom there. Well, shout out to Zach. And those are some of the things that he said have really stuck with him. But, you know, I want to get back to smart leadership. And so, I mean, you have seen leaders for 40 years now. And one of the metaphors that you use, and let me just tell you this, and as I was reading some of this, actually, Mark, I got a little teary-eyed. I just want to tell you, I got a little teary-eyed because you talk about the metaphor of swimming in quicksand. Can you expound on that for me? I mean, what do you mean by that? That you see a lot of leaders that get kind of in the quagmire.
Yeah. So let's go back to something we talked about before the break. When we decided that we wanted to work on leadership effectiveness, one of the avenues we pursued early on is what is impeding effectiveness? And we found busyness and distractions and complexity and meetings and emails and text messages and YouTube videos and just on and on and on. And we said, hey, that's probably it. That's the culprit. And I remember one of the very first meetings that I went to for an interview, because we interviewed lots of people for this work. And I said, hey, we think one of the challenges to effectiveness is busyness and complexity and distractions. And I remember this person being very gracious, and they listened and said, yes, 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 yes. They said, I understand all that intellectually, but those aren't my challenges. And I said, well, is there anything impeding your effectiveness? And they said, sure, it's just not your list. And I said, oh, okay, what's on your list? And they said, fear, fatigue, aimlessness. They said, and if I'm honest, I've probably got to say success, because I'm not willing to take a risk on what might be, because I'm fearful I would lose what I've already got. And so the team and I sat down and said, okay, what do we do with all this? And we said, well, it's all part of the same toxic mix. We decided to call it quicksand. And we said, the truth is that different leaders have different elements in play at any given time in their life or based on their circumstances. So then we said, okay, let's go out there and see how leaders respond to all this stuff, the quicksand. And we found three primary strategies. The first is just to swim in it, which is what you referenced. And I think this is a natural leadership response, because leaders are leaders, right? And when the going gets tough, the tough get going, and we're going to set the example, and we're going to be the role model, and we're just going to push. Well, there are a couple of fundamental problems with swimming in quicksand. One is you'll never do your best work. I've never seen anybody win a gold medal swimming in quicksand. So it's really, really hard.
Right.
Secondly, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And I would even argue that a lot of this great resignation that we've seen over the last couple of years, I mean, there are many, many factors, and I'll acknowledge that. But I think some of the folks who were just throwing in the towel, they're exhausted because they've been swimming in quicksand, which actually leads to the second potential strategy, and that's just to quit, just to give up, just to give in. You die. Now, you might not physically die, but your hopes and dreams are extinguished in that moment when you decide to quit swimming. So swim in it, you can sink, Or third, you can escape. And we found leaders who spend very little, if any, time in quicksand. So we decided that's the group we're going to study, and they're the ones that helped us identify the four choices.
So powerful. Well, I want to talk to you more about that. I want to dig into that. But one of the things that you say, Mark, is you said, you know, quicksand has two basic elements, water and sand.
In the wild, right.
In the wild, right. But leadership has a lot more elements than that. And I found some of these stats just staggering. I think our leaders will too, but meetings, you have a Harvard study that says meetings account for 72% of the work week.
Well, that was for CEOs. That was for CEOs. And that was a 12-year study. Now, I think that there's a revelation there, but I think there might be two. One is how much time they're spending in meetings, and we can debate the pros and cons of that later. Mm-hmm. Not many people look at the flip side of that. That means they're spending 28% of their time alone. See, I talk to a lot of leaders who have no alone time. And I said, you actually need margin in your life and leadership. Now, I don't know if that's the magic number. That's what the math worked out to be for CEOs. But when do you have time set aside to reflect, to assess, to think, to create, and to plan? And I meet so many leaders that have zero margin for those activities. And I think that's how you actually plan your escape from the quicksand. You can't fill up every minute. You're actually paid to reflect, to assess, to think, to create, and to plan. And too many leaders have let that fall off their plate.
Yeah, that is so powerful, Mark. It is so powerful. And I know I have fallen into that trap sometimes because there's so much to do. But if you don't take that time to step back and reflect and plan, then you may be doing, but you're doing all the wrong things, like we talked about before. One of your isms that I'm going to remember in my brain, you just reminded me of it, is you said clarity never happens when in motion.
That's right. It's really hard when you're moving. And the faster you're moving, it's even more difficult to get clarity. And here's one more piece of that. Because I've had leaders quite honestly and transparently tell me about their lives, and I've been in these situations myself. But here's the question. If you don't have time to reflect, to assess, to think, to create, and to plan, who's doing that? And maybe the answer is no one. Then you fall into the trap of confusing activity with accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not the same thing. They're not the same thing. So I think a lot of leaders are in the quicksand in part because they don't carve out the time to map out their escape plan.
Yeah. So wise. So wise. Digital communication on page 12 here. I mean, oh my word. This one, I think, plagues all of us here. But get this. We tap, swipe, and click our phones, not 20 times, not 200 times, 2,617 times a day. The average smartphone user unlocks his or her phone 150 times a day. We send or receive 94 texts per day on average. There are 23 billion text messages sent per day. This number continues to increase at a staggering rate. The number per day doubling during a recent 24. You get it. I mean, it's
There's one more stat. There's one more stat. Yeah, the YouTube stat.
The YouTube stat uploads users. YouTube users upload more than 300 hours of content every minute,
which is 432,000 hours a day, if I'm not mistaken. That's why we can't watch all the cat videos. There's just too much content.
Exactly.
A lot of distractions out there.
Lots of distractions. Oh, my word. 25% of our day, you said, is spent just responding to email. I believe that. I do have a lot of filters on my email.
Let me one more asterisk on all of that. All that data was pre-pandemic. So I've got a lot of people telling me that the pandemic just made all that worse. See, I don't think the pandemic created the quicksand. I think it intensified it. I think that's what we felt during the last 36 months.
Right. Well, so tell me this, because you already queued me up for this, so thank you for that. But so here's the question. What do we do in response to the quicksand? And you already said you studied the leaders that refuse to get bogged down in the quicksand. So what are they doing differently? How are they managing all of this, Mark?
Yeah, it's the four choices. They choose to confront reality. They choose to grow capacity, including the margin we just talked about, to reflect, to think, to assess, to create, and to plan. They fuel curiosity, and they make the courageous choice to create change. And as you do those things, it has a positive and cumulative effect that will help you get out of the quicksand so that you can lead from high, dry ground. And that's the only place that you can lead from well.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is smart leadership. When you embrace those four choices, and I love this, and this encapsulates this whole piece to me. Smart leaders are the levers required to improve the world. Smart leaders. So I would say most people, and maybe there are people out there that don't want this, but if you really dug deep with people, Mark, I think most people want to make a difference. They want to know that their life mattered, that, to borrow Steve Jobs, you know, they want to make a dent in the world, you know. So I love that. Smart leaders are the levers required. So the way I deduct that is I say, I want to be a smart leader. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I want to talk just a minute about culture rules, and obviously we cannot dig in here too much. I will tell you that, oh my goodness, there's so much we could talk about. There's so much here that we could talk about, but here is the subtitle, The Leader's Guide to Creating the Ultimate Competitive Edge. So why don't you, and I will tell you, you need to reach out to Zach. Because he has already done his cliff notes on your book, Mark. So you might want to grab that from here. Here's what he says. He goes, Mark Miller's latest book, Culture Rules, answers a question that often drives me completely nuts. And I'm always seeking to find an answer. What do effective leaders actually do to grow a strong and healthy culture? But why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of culture rules, and then how would you respond to that? How do smart leaders grow a healthy culture?
Okay, well, thanks for teeing that up, and I'll have to thank Zach for those cliff notes. So again, a word of context. Some of your listeners prefer context. I'll give you just a little bit. This is another one of those issues that we said we want to serve the broader leadership community, because one of the things that we began to hear pre-COVID was about the stress and the strain on culture. And that was being driven by some of the same factors, actually, that were plaguing individual leaders. Volume, scope, scale, complexity, globalization, supply chain, so forth and so on. And all of that was exacerbated during COVID. COVID put pressure on organizations. And when you put pressure on something, it reveals both strengths and weaknesses. And so a lot of organizations discovered during COVID that their culture was not strong. These may be cracks that had been there for a long, long time, but the pressure brought that to stark reveal for them. And so we said, okay, if we're going to help here, we need to figure out what is universally true about culture. That's kind of the MO that we've used over the years. Our approach to all of this work is, let's just don't share our opinion. Let's share what is true. And so we did a global study. We ended up talking to over 6,000 leaders and frontline associates in 10 countries. And we said, we've got to figure out what is going on with culture. One thing we learned is that you don't have to convince the majority of leaders that culture is important. 72% of leaders said culture is the most important driver of performance. It was the top vote getter. 72% said culture, it's actually the way it was worded, is the most powerful tool they have to drive performance. That's okay. So this book is not going to be about convincing people of that.
Right.
7 out of 10 already believe it. They understand it intellectually or intuitively or experientially. They got it. Fantastic. Then we ask in this same survey to rank their priorities. Creating and maintaining culture came in at number 12. Number 12. So we said, okay, just, you know, I'm not that smart a guy, but I think there's a problem here.
Yes.
If it's the number one driver of performance and it's number 12 on your priority list, that's a problem. So the team went to work and said, how do we close that gap? And again, we don't have time to go into a lot of detail today, but we said, let's focus on those behaviors that the leader is uniquely positioned to provide, to engage in. What are those critical few things that a leader can do? And we came up with three. We call them the culture rules. There are three rules. The rules help you play the game well, and if you violate the rules, you lose the game. It's pretty straightforward. People say, well, I don't like rules. I said, well, I don't care if you like them or not. If they're rules of a game, then those are the rules that govern the game. And these are the three rules that govern creating a high-performance culture. Number one, you have to aspire. Aspire. You have to share your hopes and dreams for the culture. You would not believe how many leaders cannot articulate their hopes and dreams for their culture. It starts there. You cannot create that which you cannot articulate. Number two is amplify, which is the ongoing effort by leaders to amplify and reinforce the aspiration. It's like, okay, whatever you want to happen, you actually have to do some things that will let people know you're serious, this is legit, this is credible, and we're actually going to pursue this. That's amplify. And three, you have to adapt. And this is tricky because if you have a clear aspiration and you amplify it well, the culture will begin to move toward that aspiration. And a lot of leaders, I mean, we love to get things done and you want to check stuff off and you want to say, ooh, that's the aspiration. We're doing that. Check. I want to go do something else. In essence, a lot of leaders slip into this protectionist mindset. I say they want to shrink wrap their culture. What you do when you shrink wrap it is you suffocate it. You can't do that. Adapt is to always work to enhance your culture. And so if you apply those three culture rules, you can actually make your dreams come true as a leader.
I love it. You can't shrink wrap it. It's always moving, right? You've got to always pay attention and just continue. I think about continuous improvement. We've never really arrived, Mark. So I am looking, there was a awesome quote, and I'm trying to find it now, where you talk about the hinge and the oil. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, culture is the oil for the hinge of the organization, right? You can build all this stuff, but without culture, there's still too much friction there. By the way, every organization has a culture.
Oh, yes, they do.
Either by design or by default.
That's right. That's right.
By default, never end well.
Yeah. I would just really encourage our listeners, pre-order this book, get this book. It's going to be so great. And you don't owe me anything, Mark. You don't owe me anything for that. I just want our listeners to continue to grow. And I'm telling you, Mark's books will help you do that. So it'll be like you have your own personal mentor in Mark. But Mark, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
They need more leaders. I have turned a few heads before, particularly when I'm invited to a leadership conference and I stand up and say, there's something every organization needs more than leadership. People look at me like I've lost my mind. And I say, they need a leadership culture. They need a place where leaders are routinely and systematically developed and you have a surplus. Because until you have a surplus, you don't have ready now leaders to take those problems and those opportunities and wrestle them to the ground. And so I don't hear enough people talking about building a leadership culture. And again, I talk a lot about helping leaders grow, and I will continue to do that. But there is a higher bar. Create a place that creates leaders, and then you've really got something.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I think, was that Truett that said that we are in the business of building people?
You know, Truett has said several things like that.
Yes.
Over the years. Yeah. And I am all about building people, but the organizations that are going to thrive into the future, they're going to start by building leaders because the leaders are the ones that build the people.
That's right. That's right. So good. Well, Mark, this has been so much fun. I so appreciate your time today. I know that this is going to be so helpful to our listeners. So I just appreciate you. Thank you, and I'm very grateful.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.